I'm Jay Boisseau, the executive director and founder of the Austin Forum on Technology, and I'm very excited to be here today with a longtime friend and colleague, Brad Engler. Brad, thanks for joining us on the Austin Forum Upload.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, Brad, I'm super happy to have you here because I just got a copy of your book, and I confess I haven't had a chance to read it yet because I just got it in the mail last week. But I'm looking forward to talking to you about this book in this podcast today, so it will incite others to read your book as well. So I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions about it, your motivation and what it's about and why our audience should care. Before I do, I want to share with our audience a little bit about your background. And in fact, I'm going to ask you to give just a quick bio sketch about all the different things you've done.
Well, after graduate school, I joined Arthur Andersen, which became Andersen Consulting and subsequently Accenture. I was with the firm for 22 years and primarily big transformational IT projects, $100 million projects with 220 people by later in my career. And about half were higher education. So my clients being Ohio State, Michigan, Columbia, Vanderbilt, even the Aggies. And then the other half being state government related. After 2 years of hiatus after retiring from Accenture, I was asked to join the University of Texas at Austin to help with an IT strategy, pro bono, so they're too cheap to pay for parking or dry cleaning. And that was in October 2008. By March 2009, I was half-time. And by June, I was full-time and managed the central IT department for the next 8 years as chief information officer.
And that's, of course, when I came to know you, since I was working at the Texas Advanced Computing Center at UT, and I came to know you in your CIO role, but came to appreciate the rich background you had in technology. And that's going to lead me into my first question, which is, could you tell our listeners the title of your book, what it's about at a high level before we really dive in, and why that matters for a technology audience?
Well, the title of the book is Spheres of Influence, How to Create and Nurture Authentic Business Relationships. And there are two spheres of influence. The internal sphere are those you had the most direct impact with, your boss, direct reports, executive leaders, and all your staff. And then you have an external sphere of influence where you have direct impact, and that would be customers, peers and influencers, and strategic vendor partners. And it's important on all those relationships to build long-term trusting relationships because there's reciprocity and it's in your self-interest to do so.
Do you have any guidance for our pretty technology savvy audience as to why they should read this book? They're of course very familiar with all of the technologies of communication, from video conferencing, as you and I are doing right now to record this podcast, to email, to social media, et cetera. And they might think that that's sufficient for building these relationships. But what advice do you have specifically for technologists and why they should read this book?
Well, there are really three major principles of how to build authentic business relationships. One is understanding their goals and aspirations. So you need to get out of your tech world and just find out from your boss, from your direct reports, from your customers, what are their goals and aspirations? Then you ask yourself, well, how can I help? Second, you need to set and manage expectations. And that is very difficult to do, but it's a learned skill. All these are learned skills. You don't need to be born with them. And then third is you have to genuinely care about their success. If you do those three things in all of your business relationships, not only will it be more rewarding, it'll be more fun.
Yeah, and I might argue that whereas that's true for everybody in every business relationship, maybe some techies are not as, you know, on average, perhaps as good at thinking about the human side of those relationships. But technology jobs are still jobs. It's still a business. It's right. Still ultimately about how people work together. And so I think it's really important for folks to read this book, and perhaps slightly more important even for technologists and other folks that tend to dig into the technical details and get into the weeds to come out of that and think about the nature of their human relationships and their business relationships. So, right. So my second question is, what inspired you to write this book? You have this long career that you shared with us here in the beginning of the podcast, but what made it now the right time to write this book?
Well, I've been very fortunate over the past 30, 40 years to have some very, very good bosses and mentors. And to be honest, I only had one clunker. So I've been very lucky with that. Wow, yeah. I actually went through my 22 years of annual performance reviews at Accenture and looked at how they coached me every year to get me the skills and experience to become a partner and to be able to run $100 million jobs. And I was deeply impressed at how well they did. And part of the culture of the firm is grow the pie bigger. It's not like a set organization chart where someone has to die to move up. When I started with the firm, there were 40,000 employees, and now there are 700,000 employees globally. So the pie, you want to grow the pie bigger, and the way to do that is to mentor people. At the university, I really enjoyed working with my direct reports to change a culture from a reactive fire drill, heroes jumping in to save the day, into more of a customer service oriented culture where we proactively plan and practice so when issues do come up, we're ready to solve them in a way that really helps our customers. And
Go ahead. I had a thought, but go ahead. Keep finishing.
And then after I retired from the university, I continued to mentor two or three people, either from my graduate school or Austin Women in Technology, which I just enjoy. But I realized that's not a very wide audience, and I can't clone myself. So how can I have a bigger impact for those who are growing in their career or establishing their career? How can I help them be more successful? And so that's why I decided to write the book.
Well, I applaud your emphasis on mentoring and the role it's had in your career and how you want to continue doing that. And certainly scaling that ability to provide what you've learned and benefited from a book is a great way to do that. I do have to ask a question, though, about you mentioned in Accenture, the mindset wasn't that it was a finite pie, but you could grow the pie. And so there was room for everybody to move up. You just had to develop everybody. Whereas in the university, a place that you would normally think of as being less cutthroat than the private sector, the pie was relatively fixed there, right? I mean, you had a relatively fixed IT budget and a fixed number of leadership positions. So can you compare and contrast the private sector versus public sector challenges of relationships? And did the ability to grow the pie in that particular private sector job at Accenture offset some of the private sector stresses compared to leading in the public sector?
Well, the public sector definitely was more challenging from a resource perspective. My first year was 2009, where we had a recession. All our budgets, including yours, were cut by the power. We unfortunately had some layoffs, but we were able to get through that. And then it was more, how can we prioritize what we're spending on to get the most value out of it? And that takes looking at what are the needs and how do we reprioritize the budget you already have. There was not a lot of new money coming in, so it's more reprioritizing what we wanted. My first year also was H1N1 swine flu, and the president asked, can we go online? And we had Blackboard for a learning management system, which was buggy and slow and clunky. It was on 8 to 10-year-old Sun Solaris servers that I could not even buy anymore because they don't make them. Our email system was a custom-built 18-year-old email system where students had a maximum of 50 emails faculty a maximum of 100. To get the next one, you had to delete one. Well, my son's a history major at UT. He gets 50 emails a day. So that would not scale.
Brad, I wish all my emails got deleted when it got above 100 in my inbox.
Man, that's a good idea.
It would be tens of thousands, I'm afraid. But anyway.
And then we had expensive file sharing. Our survey tool was not secure. And it just, frankly, scared me and started an 8-year march towards the cloud. And students and faculty helped pick the learning management system, which was designed for the cloud. And 10 years later, still going strong. We replaced the old, turned off the old 18-year-old email system. Those students have a UT-branded Gmail. You can keep it after you graduate, over 180,000 accounts and growing. And faculty, we implemented Office 365/Teams because they liked the calendaring more than the Gmail. Yeah. And then we did Qualtrics for file surveys, Box for file sharing, terabytes of file storage, and ended up with ServiceNow to track service issues and help desk. And finally, Workday HR payroll. So in March 2020, my successor was able to increase the VPN, increase the Zoom licenses, and in 2 weeks, 52,000 students, 4,000 faculty, and 21,000 staff were able to teach, research, and work from home. And that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was there and remember you modernizing IT at the University of Texas. And, you know, I'm afraid that some of our listeners might be younger and hear that list of applications and software as a service packages and think, oh, well, that's just, you know, standard operating procedure. But when you were doing this, it is now, exactly. When you were doing this, you were doing this all with legacy systems and with personnel that were not familiar with the cloud and cloud computing software as a service packages and modern software delivery and things like that. So, you know, I assume you really had to get buy-in here. So this is going to lead into the content of your book. Tell me why at a high level would you say is it important to build effective and enduring business relationships? And how did this help you as you had to change an entire IT culture at one of the world's largest in best universities?
Well, I started with the first 90 days meeting with my direct reports and understanding from them what was going well, what should we be investing in, what was not going well, and what should we stop doing, and what were their goals and aspirations. And many of them wanted to leave the legacy technologies far, far behind in the rearview mirror, and they were excited about learning about the cloud and moving. So we also updated our mission, our vision, and values. And the values that we came up with actually came from campus. When we did the IT strategy, we talked to 300-400 people, undergraduate students, graduate students, faculty, staff, all the VPs, all the deans. And there was a desire to modernize the technology, some of it still mainframe, and to kind of lurch us forward in that realm and have it easier to use. And I think, you know, from a customer perspective, you know, once they saw the changes, it built momentum. It's like a flywheel. And because each one of these projects took 2 years, the university is so big, it's like moving an aircraft carrier. You know, you can't, we're not a speedboat. And it has to be done at scale. So I think that was the challenge for my direct reports. How can we do modernizing technology at scale and still have happy customers?
Into the title of your book a little bit, it's called Spheres of Influence. So I want you to describe what these spheres of influence are and how it relates to these important principles of building business relationships that you've talked about so far?
Well, let's start with the internal sphere. Most of us have bosses, and it's good to start your relationship with your boss by asking, what are their goals and aspirations, and how can you help? Some people are scared to do that, but I find that most bosses welcome the discussion and will freely share, but there are some who don't. So I had one boss who prided himself on being a chess player. I'm five steps ahead, and none of you guys know where I'm heading. And he prided himself on that. And all his direct reports are like, dude, we could help you achieve your goal if you would tell us. And frankly, we're in the dark most of the time. Very unproductive and really not fair to the organization. With executive leaders, if you have the opportunity to work with executive leadership, understand what your organization's mission and values and vision are. And don't show up empty-handed. So think about what their needs are and how you can help based on your skill set. Your direct reports, especially in technology, you need to know what their aspirations are. You need to make sure the skills continue to be developed. You need to invest in training. The first thing people want to do in their budget issues, cut the training. Well, that's the death knell for technology.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never cut the training. In fact, I'll probably double up on it, because that's where you get people see that you care about their career and you're investing in it. Some of my direct reports actually assign external career advisors who could independently coach them on how to, kind of round out the elbows so they're not so sharp. And then we did 360 reviews, did that at Accenture. You cannot make all your financial numbers and abuse your people. You know, all performance evaluations done on time. You need to have your mentees successful. You know, it's a balanced scorecard. Same thing with at the university, we had 360 reviews, and we could see where were we improving and what could we do more of. And then all your staff. I wrote a blog once a week for 8 years and 350 blogs roughly. And a lot of those form the content of the book, which is what are our values, kudos for people who did a great job. I actually have an email from you, Jay, saying, I really appreciate how you communicate your values to such a large organization, because you can't rely on word of mouth. You can't rely on your managers communicating, because some like to hold the information.
Yeah.
Some just don't understand why they should share it. And so don't even try. Just have your own communication channel to all your staff so you can reinforce where you're headed. And then the external sphere, customers, the customers are not always right. I've fired customers when they were not behaving well. I had one customer blame me for things they were doing. And so I took my peer to lunch, and he looked up and said, you're firing me, aren't you? I said, yes, I am, but I'm buying you lunch and you don't have to pay for any of the services. And he realized, he said, yep, we were not a very good customer. And then peers and influencers, you can't work without them. One of my best peer relationships was with the public safety associate vice president. We knew it was not if, but when there would be a bomb scare, a shooting, a murder. And so we prepared for that well ahead of time. And we would actually do tabletop exercises with all our teams together, practicing ice storm, cyber attack, hurricane or tornadoes off a hurricane. And we would all be together doing tabletop. And we always learned how we could be better when the situation finally arose. And then finally, vendors. I was a little disappointed when I was on the other side of the table at how bad some of the vendors were. In a couple of cases in the book, lack of integrity. So I had to fire them. And then I had a couple of vendors who really stepped up, and we built a great relationship. We both had to be successful. They invested in us, we invested in them, and we ultimately were successful. So, but you have to be vigilant with your vendors.
So you just wonderfully described these internal and external spheres of influence, ranging from your direct reports and supervisor all the way out to customers, vendors, peers, and influencers. What has changed about the nature of networking now and the ability to have these spheres of influence and to have them to execute well within these spheres with sincerity and honesty and integrity, but clarity also? What tools and techniques are you using in the modern era to improve your spheres of influence, both internal and external?
Well, I found that traditional networking tends to be transactional, short-lived, sometimes superficial. So at the end of the event, you have a stack of business cards. I mean, people still use those, but I never actually referred to them again. I had one networking event where I got a business card and they hit me up for a donation for their not-for-profit. I didn't even know the person. You know, it's like, you know, I have other things I donate to. And when I got to the university, I asked a professor, a 40-year electrical engineering professor, crusty guy. I worked with him on a strategy 15 years prior for the wide area network. And I said, okay, give me some advice. He goes, get out of the office and tell people you give a damn. And I did that. I encouraged my people to get out of the office, go meet with peers, go meet with customers. We actually built a network across the university where each of us would have 7 to 10 people we would meet with about every 6 weeks. Jay, you were one of them. I would meet with you and Dan.
I remember.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, you don't really want to run that email server anymore, do you? No. I'll take that for you. And then you focus on what you do best. And so that became almost the nervous system for us to know what was going well, what was going bad. I would hear about rumors. Rumor is your generators don't have any diesel. Well, yes, they do. And we top them up every month and we test them every month. The other generator is on natural gas. So thanks for the rumor, but it's not true. But it was good to hear the rumor so we could address them and not have it blow up into something big. So it's just taking the effort to go beyond trading business cards and find people who you really relate to. Here's what I love about Austin Forum. You have workshops. You have the events where you're actually learning with people who are learning what you want to do. You have the book clubs. We're going to do a book club in May with this book where you can meet a small subset of people, of like-minded people. And just the other day, we had a speaker who had a podcast and he invited me last week to be on the podcast. It was awesome. And so I got to meet someone new, really interesting person. We will continue to be friends. And you just need to do more than likes and shares on LinkedIn.
Brad, I'm so glad that you said that. And I really appreciate it. For our listeners, I didn't coach that part about the Austin Forum part at all, but Brad has been a longtime advisor for it. And I really appreciate you noticing the different formats and the different impact of those different formats and the way we try to bring people together in large groups and small groups. Sometimes right. It's novice. Sometimes it's a bit more expert. Sometimes it's in person with built-in networking. Sometimes it's online from the comfort of your own home. And that's one of the things we've really tried to do is explore how different people at different points in their life and at different points in their technology learning for different technologies. It might be expert in one, but novice in another. And then their life circumstances are different throughout the weeks and months and years. And so we've really tried in the Austin Forum to make it easier for people to network and connect and collaborate with each other in whatever
deeper,
way they feel comfortable.
At a deeper level.
Yeah.
And that's why I continue to be a champion.
We appreciate that. It's funny, over the years, I don't think we've gotten enough credit for it. It just as I probably don't give enough credit to some of the ways that, not consciously, but that I've met people that I forgot how I met them, but they became an important business relationship, an important colleague, an important friend. And sometimes you don't remember how that happens, but getting out there and meeting people, and I don't want to say networking like it's some manipulative thing, but right. This fostering sincere relationships with people that have similar interests and passions and motivations and want to learn things and make things happen and get things done. That if you can put those kind of people in contexts where they will meet and talk, it really does help foster these kinds of business relationships, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, so what else about your business background would you like to share and how it informed this book? I think our listeners already know you have a long private sector experience with Accenture and then a long public sector career with the University of Texas. Is there anything else you want to share about your combined business experiences and how it informed your sort of comprehensive view on creating these spheres of influence?
Yeah, I believe the stories are relevant to a diverse range of industries, organizations, and backgrounds. Yes, a lot of them are in a tech context, but they're really more, they're morals to the story, and they're not all good. Some things, you know, they're, and I address how do you deal with a peer who is not truthful? How do you deal with a boss who won't tell you what they want? And so I try to come up with practical advice of how to handle not just the good, but the challenging. And it's not an academic treatise. It's not theoretical mumbo jumbo. It's real, crunchy, real world stories that I wanted to share.
Awesome. Well, I have one final question for you, and that is, what do you hope readers will take away from this book? And before you answer, I want to reference something that you said a few minutes ago, which is the Austin Forum. One of our events in May is an online book discussion. People can participate from the comfort of their own home. They can pull up a glass of whiskey or tea and listen in and talk if they want, or just listen. And it's going to be all about your book. But while we wait for that event to get here, which is almost 2 months away, what would you like the listeners to take away now? And what do you hope readers will take away about your book?
The feedback I have received so far is, I wish I had read the book 20 years ago.
That's not good. That's not a good takeaway.
But I can also adjust what I'm doing now. I had someone say, you know, I have a book club with my direct reports. This is perfect to have a book discussion of all these topics with the people I report to, because I'm trying to build a team and I've been struggling with that. Also, you know, I've been pleased it's an Amazon bestseller and number one hot new release, which I find amusing for a business book, hot new release.
New release.
I also have a YouTube channel, which just search for Brad Englert and it'll pop up the book trailer and five funny stories. One is, it never happened. So that's the boss who thought if it happened before they arrived, it never happened. Swiss cheese feet, where I shot myself in the feet so many times I had Swiss cheese feet and how I solved that. Copious notes is another one. Give a damn and good customer service. So just a little vignettes from the book that I hope people will learn from. And, you know, that's really my my goal is I hope some of my mentors and bosses have adult children now, and they're buying this book for their children to learn how to navigate the business world that they're now in. And since they were such great mentors, you know, of course, their stories are in there. They recognize them. You know, they're handing it out to their adult children. So I think that's pretty cool.
That is awesome. All right. Brad, thank you so much for being with us. I look forward to the online book discussion after I and hopefully many of our listeners have read the book. So that'll be a great Austin Forum event. You also have a book launch event coming up at Book People, right?
That's right. Wednesday, April 3rd at 7 p.m.
Great.
And so just go to the Book People website and you can register for it.
So I hope people will come to the book launch event at Book People. I hope that you will autograph copies of the book at the Austin Forum event in April. I believe that in-person event is April 16th. Hopefully you can be at that event and sign copies of the book. And then in May, we'll have our online discussion where everybody will have had time to read this book and we'll really dig in with you about some of these things. Thank you for being here with us, Brad. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Austin Forum Upload. You can listen to additional episodes and check out a schedule of our monthly in-person events at austinforum.org. The Upload is a production of the Austin Forum on Technology and Society, a nonprofit organization here in Austin, Texas.